podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello everyone, it's David here, and as regular listeners will know, I'm very enthusiastic whenever I have to do an advert about how you should shave your testicles. So much so, in fact, that the company behind it, Manscaped, who are the number one in the whole ball shaving business, I have to say, have given me a script. So I'm going to work off that this week. Summer's coming. Are you ready to unveil your beach boys? Bod. Manscaped is here to ensure your body is ready for the wild with their game-changing full body grooming and hygiene products. Don't be the guy at the beach with Austin Powell's chest hair. And if you grew some winter man tits, you can say that in an advert? Change days, man. The least you can do is make sure they're hairless. It's time to get ready for hot guy summer by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping with the code RANGERS. Manscaped is dedicated to helping you increase your confidence and level up your full body grooming game with a performance package 4.0. The kit comes with the essential lawnmower 4.0 waterproof cordless body trimmer and a ton of other liquid formulations to round out your grooming routine. And you know, I'm one of these guys that if I take off my jumper, you can't tell I've taken off my jumper. I'm old school that way. But the young folk, oh my God, did you see Erling Haaland there week? Whipped off the shot. There were not a hair on that body. He's got hunters in his head right enough. I don't. So I'm maybe follicularly trying to make up for it in that regard. But I must admit, I do like to trim the top of the chest. I don't like that overhanging, clawing hair coming out the top of the shirt. So I use that. And nobody likes nose hair. Let me tell you that right now. So the weed whacker that they provide you with is excellent. They also have ball deodorant. I know. A once proud people, right? That's all I'm saying. But it does smell quite nice. And so does their actual deodorant. You'll get 20% off and free shipping with the code RANGERS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code RANGERS at manscaped.com. So that's not too shoddy, I think you have to admit. These are good products. I know I joke, but I do use them. No, they are. And that would be abhorrent. But trim your chesticles with the besticles. And this is not on the script, but for the love of God, no matter how spectacularly shorn your George Dawes are, keep them inside when you're at the beach. Hello everyone and welcome to Heart and Hand, the Rangers podcast. My name is David Edgar. I am your host as always. And well, firstly, it's a lot more fun doing one of these after an Old Firm victory than it is after an Old Firm defeat. And with that in mind, I thought it was only one man to join me this afternoon. He has been wheeled out a lot this season after a disappointing defeat to try and cheer us all up a little bit. So much as I felt the Rangers support deserved our day in the sun on Saturday, I feel he deserves his day in the sun pod-wise this afternoon, and it's Andy McGowan. Good evening, Andy. How are you?
Well, I've got to thank you, David, for having me on, because I've been looking forward to this. There's been many an occasion where I've been asked to
polish a turd.
Well, that's one way of putting it, but I fashion some positivity out of something that's not very positive at all, and I try my hardest, and sometimes I don't even believe myself. So
you've never been asked to do it, you just naturally do
it.
Nah,
that's true, I should say that. I've never been asked to do it, but it is kind of expected. You know, on social media, folk will say, "Tell me something, Andy."
That you've become a bit. You have become a sort of like a harbinger of hope, a bringer of the good things of the losses. And look, let's just right at the start, Andy. Some people actually said to us on Patreon that maybe we were actually going the other way and underplaying, you know, the victory and saying it had no significance and whatnot. I don't think that's true. I don't think that it had no significance. I think that Michael Beale in particular really needed it. I think we as a support needed it. I think some of the players needed it. But what I was very conscious of not wanting to do was something that Celtic fans did a lot in the 90s, which was they would lose the last Old Firm game of the season when the league had already been, they would win the, sorry, the last Old Firm game of the season when the league had already been decided, and they would go, "I will not that far away," and sort of delude themselves into, "I don't want to do that either." Yes, it was nice to win, but the team still has to win when it matters. And in terms of the changes that we require, what we needed to do Friday morning, we needed to do Monday morning. It was good. It was enjoyable. We'll come to why it was important for Michael Beale. But it's still in the grand scheme of things. Let's not get carried away. Let's keep our feet in the ground and go, okay, it's removed what was a thing, but let's now focus on what we need to do to close the gap, because while we've said on here, I don't think the gap is huge, there is a gap, and it's a big enough one.
No, totally on the same page about the 90s and Celtic and the delusion, and it's something that's been very much in my mind since then, because the perspective has got to be kept, and that fact, the cold hard facts are that a couple of weeks' time, they'll have a treble, we'll have nothing. It's been a disaster this season overall, probably a tumultuous season. And the thing I would say is that what it will give us, or should give us, is that whatever we need to do next season starts with belief in the dressing room. It starts with belief in the stands. And I think it was very, very much needed that we can remind ourselves that we can give Celtic a bloody nose. And the manner of the victory, you know, really reinforced that. And that they're not unassailable. And I know there is a gap, unquestionably, but I've said for a wee while now that we just need to remember that they're not unassailable. It's not a team of Loudrum and Gascoigne's that we can't compete in the same market for players. And apart from anything else, David, it gave us a wee spring this day. I don't know about you, but I'm certainly felt a lot better about myself as a Rangers fan since Saturday. And we badly, badly needed it this season.
Oh, 100%. And as you say, we're not getting carried away. And I don't think the support have, incidentally. I think the reaction has been pretty solid. We enjoyed it for what it was, but we're not using it to, I think, extrapolate into the future. There are positives, though, from Saturday. And look, you know, that's probably the negativity done, folks. And if you want negativity, there's tons of it from previous pods of season to wire in. But this one will be kind of upbeat because it was just a nice day. I thought that tactically the manager got it right. And I liked the bite that the team showed. And straight away, there was something different about it, that the team went for it. And of course, crucially, for the first time since the Phil Hellander goal, can you believe? The first time that Rangers have taken the lead or scored the opening goal. We took the lead at the January game, but scored the opening goal and therefore not had to chase a match. And I think that the guy who really led that from the front was Todd Cantwell. A lot's been said about him, and understandably so. For me, it's not merely his performances, because he's clearly a good footballer, right? It goes with it saying. He clearly is a talented footballer. Nobody had any doubts about that. But he surprised me, and I know he surprised a lot of our listeners, with the type of player he is. I think maybe we all felt he was a sort of, you know, a kind of fey attacking number 10, the hairband, the hair maybe kind of blinded us to that. He is nonstop. He gets stuck in and he drives people on. The guy's a leader. And you need in any team, I think, Andy, you can't have 11 superstars. You need a couple, though, because you need people that other players in the team can look at and go, if I do my job, we've got him and he'll do something. He'll make something happen. So I just need to make sure I win my battle. And it does give people that extra 5%. I suppose what I'm trying to say is he's got that good gift of helping teammates to play better.
I thought he was superb. I think he's been our best player for a good few weeks. I thought his goal against Aberdeen was absolutely sublime. I don't think he got the recognition it should have across the media, but which knew. And then Saturday, I think he reached his pinnacle so far in his Rangers career in terms of everything you're speaking about there, Davey. He was another captain. He is another captain in the dressing room now. And it's not what I expected from, as you say. I knew he was a good football player. I knew that we'd got a gem for a relatively small price. But what I didn't expect over the piece so far is the kind of tigerish ball recovery. His desire is exactly what we need. You know, Beale was talking about energy the last couple of weeks around Morelos. So the other side of energy was exemplified by Todd Cantwell. And the reason that Celtic have dominated us for the last, whatever it is, seven games and obviously in the competitions is because they have players in their team and in their squad that are, I call, difference makers, you know. They are the people that they turn to make the difference between our team and their team. And you can point to the Furuhashi as the main one. And I thought Cantwell was your difference maker on Saturday, because from the first whistle, he was fairly leading the line, right? You know, he was knitting Matondo and Sakala together, but also his kind of ability to win the ball back, harry the opposition, lead the press, and he then marries that with absolutely sublime technical ability. I can't remember for a long time a player that I've been so comfortable watching with the ball. You know, he gets the ball and you know he can protect it. He uses his strength, he holds players off, he finds space, he can pass a ball. Everything looks just so effortlessly easy for him. And the goal itself was technique. You know, it looks like a blast, but it was technique. It was doing low and hard. And I just thought he was fantastic. And it's things like that, Davey, and I know I missed their optimism, but the fact that we've signed Cantwell and Raskin, and that the quality, that's a new standard in our squad, is always giving me that bit of hope that, you know, things will change fast. And if the players that we sign are anywhere close to Todd Cantwell's level in terms of technique and desire and application, we will be fine. We will be absolutely fine. And my last word on him just now, Davey, is that I mentioned Matondo and Sakala there. He's an extremely intelligent football player. And what I mean by that is that he was corralling Matondo and Sakala and telling them when to press, where to position, explaining things through the game because I was watching them. And that in itself for a guy, I mean, he's 25, but we've got a real gem there, and a talisman is what he's going to become for us.
Yeah, I noticed actually going into the game at the weekend, a lot of kids, a lot of boys and girls outside the stadium with Cantwell 13. And that's quite interesting to me, because obviously Morelos, who has kind of been the hero for a long time, he's moving on. And it looks as though he's going to take the mantle. And a big part of that is, we speak about this at Rangers, you need to have a certain attitude. A guy who revels being the star in front of 50,000 people. You know, the guy who revels being at a huge club, I know it's not the biggest league, but being at a huge club and being the centre of attention in a way that somebody like Aribo, his personality wasn't suited to that. He's a very quiet boy, you know, kind of shunned the limelight where he could. Cantwell's more the geezer. You know, I want that. I want that. I want you all thinking I'm magic. I want, you know, the adoration. I have no problem with that, because I think that to be a star for Rangers in that creative sense, you need that. You've got to have the balls, because you'll get criticism. And the thing about a player like that at Ibrox, Andy, is we grade on a curve. So as our expectations go up for him, so will our demands. And that's when you need that mental strength. That's when you need that attitude. And I think he's got it. One thing to remember about him and Raskin is that Rangers paid $1.5 million each for those two in January when they both had 6 months left in their deal. Now, that's unusual for Rangers. And I think that Bennett was kind of pushing that and Beale was pushing that. I think previously Rangers would have went, oh, we'll just wait till the summer. And I think that they went in. Now, when you're paying $1.5 million for a guy for 6 months, it's a lot of money. But you get quality. These are not $1.5 million players, right? Had they had a couple of years in their deal, you're not getting them for, you know, six times that, you know? And I think that you see the benefit of it now, because we've got guys who are unsettled, fans like them, fans trust them. I thought Raskin was brilliant at the weekend. You saw everything that he can bring to the side as well, and he's another boy that's got the right attitude. We take the lead through that goal, and as you say, it's an absolutely brilliant goal. And incidentally, it comes from John Lundstrom having a shot. I don't know how many times we've all sat on this show and said, shoot more, because it just, you never know, right? You never know. But you still need to be alive to it. And there was Cantwell. And it was then about, you know, they miss a chance at 0-0, fair enough. I think it might have been offside. I need to see it again. But we get the second. And I honestly don't think I could have picked a boy I wanted to score more than John Souter. He's had a hellish year, you know, on and off the park, injuries and whatnot. Then he makes that mistake in an Old Firm game, which was a shame because he'd been good otherwise. There he is, gets the moment, gets the goal, and sort of, I think, maybe signals his arrival as a Rangers player. I like him. I think he's a good player. And I just think that he could end up playing a bigger part than maybe many people myself included, maybe thought when he arrived.
So I think his demise has been greatly exaggerated, and I've probably kept my real thoughts around Suter private because nobody wanted to hear it, A, and B, it sometimes sounds like you're just trying to, as you say, polish a turd. Now, his injury problems have been well documented, but when he is fit, he is an exceptionally good centre-half. And to get him on a Bosman, I think, is fantastic business. And I think the way I would describe it is if he's good enough to wait for, he's good enough to wait for. And we kind of had this with Amoruso. If you think back, you know, first year was a write-off. Effectively, it took ages to get fit. But I think he's going to be a real asset for us. I don't think he's a bit part player. I think he'll be, you know, in and around the first 11, and it'll be a tremendous option for us. And as you say, Davey, I don't think, I mean, we moan about players being injured as if it's their fault, you know. And to be in his position, signing for Rangers, his family issues he's had this year as well, which, you know, have been considerable, and to be written off as he has, it takes a lot of fortitude to get yourself back for that. And then, as you say, that error at Parkhead, I felt heart sorry for him, as bad as it was. And I was delighted to see that he scored that, because it's a wee bit of monkey off his back, because things like a goal against Celtic and a victory change perspectives of players, whether we know it or not. You know, Nigel Spackman, Eke Hogg, players like that. It moves the dial forward for players that are Rangers in terms of the fans' understanding them, I suppose. He's going to be absolutely fine if he stays fit. And I, you know, we've got to always put that caveat in just because of the record behind him. He had a great game. I think he's just the ball, he's taken for granted, but he's also excellent at coming out with the ball, especially in the first 10 minutes. There was a wee passage of play where he was kind of penned in with two or three Celtic players around the belt, and he just manoeuvred his way out of that with the ball at his feet and came into midfield. That's exactly what we need in our centre halves. So, as you say, Davey, absolutely delighted for John Suter. I hope he goes on and on for here, has a strong finish to the season, and next year plays a pivotal part in success.
Yeah, I'm not definitely. And Rangers were, you know, very good at this point. Celtic, I hate to say it, but they are a good side. You can see the way they move the ball and the way they make runs is the sign of a well-coached side. And they have moved us about, and they weren't quite so able to at the weekend. And I think it started from right at the back with a very impressive display from young Robbie McCrory. In the first half, he came sprinting out his goal and cleared one. And you don't think of anything after that, right? Because it's been out for a throw. The passage of play is immediately forgotten. But we don't do that normally, which means that there is defending to be done. And then if a mistake gets made then, you know, you're in bother. And in the second half in particular, there was one where he's on his feet before the pass is played. He's out there and he gets it and he shuts down the danger because Kyogo's got away. And I'm thinking, normally, that's a goal. Really, genuinely, I'm thinking normally that's a goal. And can I just say to the wag behind me in the main stand who shouted out, "Hey, Davey, are keepers allowed to do that?" It did make me laugh. But he did not put a foot wrong, Andy, I thought. And people are saying now 4 games, 4 clean sheets. He's been in high-pressure matches. You think of that one away in Europe, obviously the Old Firm game previously. He's taken a claim.
Yeah, I mean, my assessment of goalkeepers isn't very good. I've got to say, it's a weak point of mine amongst many. And very much like what you're describing there, on Saturday, there was a couple of times he was pretty fast off his line, you know, coming out to the edge of his box, picking up balls, clearances, and a kind of penny drop for me. And I'm like, okay, right, I get what folk have been going on about McGregor for now. I can see it. Because it's just like a unspoken confidence from the back, and because he's I don't think he's a particularly loud goalkeeper, he's not the Mr. Angry type like McGregor, and he just seemed competent at everything he did every time I've seen him, to be honest, and Rangers colours, I must say. And what he's doing, much as we're saying about moving the dial for Suter, he's moving the dial in terms of perception for him as well, because as you say, that's two big games against Celtic, which is the ones that we remember, and he's not put a foot wrong. He's had a couple of exceptional moments in both those games. Because the save he made for O'Reilly, I thought was absolutely fantastic. I think he should have scored, but I still think it was a fantastic save to get it up and over the bar. And the stake and acclaim thing is, it's coming at the right time. Because personally, I think we do need a number one goalkeeper. And if it's Butland, then fantastic. I'd be delighted with that. But as we know, Rangers, you need to have a really good second goalkeeper as well. And I think he's probably cemented that at the very least. In my eyes, because I think McLaughlin's probably, his experiences this year have probably put an end to his career at Rangers, and McGregor's obviously finishing off. So it's timely that we, if we get a number one, that we've got a number two that we're sitting there saying, you know what, totally fine with him coming in. And given his age in the long term, he could sit through his contract and sign another contract and be the number one then. So, or you sell Butland or whatever, whoever we get. It's a good position to be in, and I'm delighted that we've been, if there's one silver lining to the dead rubber, if you were to call it that, is that we've been afforded the opportunity to actually play them of our own volition, as opposed to because somebody's injured or suspended or whatever.
Yeah, no, and he did tremendously well. It was an excellent save, but just I thought his all-round game was pretty solid, and Alan McGregor's still capable of making astonishing saves, but it's been the other parts of the game that's been noticeable, and I think the defence relaxed a bit with that, knowing they could do that. And obviously, if you're a wee bit more relaxed, you're less likely to make mistakes. If you're thinking about, if I make a mistake, it's a goal. And in the end, it was actually Celtic who made the error. Starfelt dawdling on the ball, robbed by the inevitable Todd Cantwell, and Fashion Sakala clean through on goal. Didn't just boot it straight at the goalkeeper, which has been his MO. Third time lucky in this sense. He rounds Joe Hart, which is lovely. You never see that anymore. It's like Tudor Gammon crisps. And he rounds the goalkeeper. And I admit, from the gantry, I thought he'd put it wide again. I really did. And it was only when I saw the Copeland go up that I thought, aye, it's actually in. Fair play to him. It was a really good finish.
So I'm in the governed rear centre, and so I'm kind of behind the ball and in the net, and I shit myself, I've got to be honest.
It moves right at the last, it's well, rolling into the middle of the goal, and then for some reason it just fucking deviates like a golf putt into the side of the net.
He just done it too naturally for him, you know, it's actually a brilliant and very, very composed finish from start to finish for him, right, running the goalie, taking to run him and you know, it doesn't even, if you watch it back, he doesn't even lift his eyes to see where the goal is. He's fully concentrated on the ball and he just naturally rolls it in. And it was so close to the post that I'm like, he fucking missed that. And it went in. But it begs the question, how can you do that fashion? But you kind of, you know, put the ball in with two attempts.
And it's why we need upgrades. It's who he is.
Do you know I agree, David? So we spoke about him after the semi-final, and we both kind of say, look, it's more than good squad player, but we're kind of done with him because you can only cost trophies so often with such mega mistakes, you know. He still gets somebody off, but I thought he worked very, very hard. And
yeah, he does, but I just think there comes a point where a player can be a wee bit too far gone with the support. And I think he's in that category that the fans just, they don't really rate him that highly and gets the numbers. I just think there comes a point where Fashion could go off like a train next year and get like 8 and 10 games and then miss a sitter and every go, I tell you, he's pish. And that's, I think when that happens, put it this way, I wouldn't be heartbroken if he sticks about. I would worry if we needed to use him in really big games and maybe that tells you something. But the other thing I would say is if he is sellable, I sell him. If somebody's going to give us 3-4 million for him, take that.
Absolutely. I don't think there's a player in the squad, Davey, that if an offer comes in, it'll not be considered. So he's certainly in that category. And again, he was a Bosman, so it's all upside. I mean, he's probably got 2 years left in his contract. So, no, I don't think there's anybody in the squad that is not willing to be sacrificed for the right money. But if we can't, we'll ask him.
I would totally agree with that, and still enjoyed his goal right enough, and it gave us a victory. Now, to go back to something that we mentioned at the weekend, Michael Beale He came in, and you could see that he was, the word I would use probably relief. You know, he was pleased with performance and whatnot, and he wasn't, you know, he wasn't jumping up and down, and he wasn't trying to claim that it was something that it wasn't. But going into this match, I felt that he couldn't really win a lot from it, but he could lose quite a bit from it, because I think that had he lost again, then of course a Rangers manager that loses, or you know, doesn't win in five matches and loses four in a row against Celtic is going to be under pressure. That's just a fact. And it would have left that thing all summer of he can't lay a glove on Celtic. Now, as I say, people can say, oh, it was a dead rubber, it didn't matter. But it doesn't matter in regards to that. It was a win. There's one in that column now. That's what the record books say. And that's what matters. So even though it probably wasn't the biggest game that we'll ever play against that lot, it wasn't even the biggest game this month, in all honesty, it did matter, because he needed that. And he used a phrase afterwards that resonated with me, Andy, where he said, it's only 3 points, but it gives us a wee bit of space, a wee bit of oxygen to get on with what we need to do in the summer. And I thought, that's it. That's spot on.
Yeah. I mean, in the lead up, the chat around Beal losing, and, you know, you've got some fans saying it's unacceptable when you need to go, and then you've got other folks saying that, you know, it's a consideration. I was obviously the one that would be saying, well, no, you can't judge him on this season, it's not his squad and so forth. But it is a thing. It would have hung over the summer, and then going into the first Old Firm of next year, it would have been an even bigger thing, because, you know, it's not like a fresh start. Everything counts, everything's against you, whether it's fair or no, when you're a Rangers manager. And if he'd have lost the first game of next season, and that would have been, what, his sixth defeat in a row, if Saturday hadn't went away,
yeah. That
puts him under a lot of pressure. And that belief thing that I'm talking about, and he refers to it as oxygen, and it's the same thing. I think that belief then dissipates in the stands, because a lot of fans would just say, they've got his number. So for that point of view, I would probably cast my mind back to Watersmith after they took over for Le Guin. You know, we've got a debacle on our hands there, and a squad that's bereft, needing a bit of immediate surgery, and then he had a good victory away. In fact, was that the Etihad game?
It was.
So I remember that being, it felt a wee bit of a turning point, because again, I go back to belief. We gave him a bloody nose, which in that season was unforeseeable, because, you know, we were pretty damn poor that year as well, and there was a lot of squad issues and rebuild required as well. So there are similarities, and I would probably put it in that category, as opposed to what we were talking about earlier on, David, where, you know, Celtic beat us when we've got Billy Thompson in goals and he's 38 or something like that. So it was important for that, and it was probably unspoken that it was required. We would have probably dismissed it as Rangers fans, because we probably would have put our head in the sand a wee bit about the reality of them losing Saturday and it being the fifth defeat or whatever, or fourth defeat in five. So it was big for that perspective.
Yeah, I think that it just allows them that bit of room now to go off, because the atmosphere you mentioned there, the goal against Aberdeen from Todd Cantwell was sort of instantly dismissed, because nobody was in the mood, really, after the semi-final. And I was really worried the season would just peter out, is the phrase that we use, but would just, you know, be defeat and grim and counting down the others. And you're right, now it doesn't really matter now what happens. Still want to win the games, obviously, but the fans are now looking ahead to next season with a little bit of positivity. And that was the only thing I think Rangers could achieve on Saturday, and they did. So fair play. It doesn't change what's been a massively disappointing season. But if there is one sort of glimmer of light for me, it's the fact that nobody at Rangers is labouring under any misapprehension about the changes that need to take place. The manager's out there, he's scouting players, he's talked about bringing in as many as a dozen, maybe the same going out the way. They're not going to do what we did for the last couple of years. I think there is a sense from people at the club, Andy, that a malaise had crept in, which is why a lot of people have left. I think that there was a sense of, on we at the club, a sense of comfort that this is how we do things. And I just think that you're going to see at Rangers over the next couple of months a much sort of younger, hungrier looking club on and off the park in terms of, you know, staff and whatnot. And I think there is a sense of needing that energy. The word you mentioned earlier is spot on, needing that energy, because we had become a little bit staid, set in our ways, no real momentum. It was more just about, you know, we were sort of getting by on a week-to-week basis, which can happen when you've been in a job for too long. Whereas now we've got people, and we'll be bringing in people who have got stuff to prove. Now, I'm not saying that that's, by the way, that doesn't translate automatically to so we'll be successful, right? You can bring in the wrong people and it can go tits up, but you couldn't just continue with the status quo. If we'd kept doing what we were doing, we were going to keep getting what we've been getting.
I agree with every word you've said, Davey, and I probably, if I'm being self-critical, I was part of that malaise, because there was no question that I knew that, and I had said that there was wholesale change needed on the park, but the off-the-park stuff has taken me by surprise a wee bit, because it's been far, far more radical than I could ever have imagined. And my kind of viewpoint, and probably my nature, was that conservatism probably trumped radicalism in those regards, because it is a big risk to rip up the entire innards of the corporate structure, if you want to put it that way. But it's obviously something that Visgrove and Bennett have either had in mind or have decided to bite the bullet on. And there is risk involved, you know. You've got to keep the hand on the tiller, and I dare say that they're feeling a wee bit of heat just now as a transition for Stuart Robertson leaving, and if Kenny Ramsay's leaving, and Andrew Dixon, who's in with the Bricks there. There will be a different dynamic next season for every kind of level of the club. So, but as you say, it could get wrong, right? And it's not about me being right or you being right, or you know fans kind of dying on the hill that they've chosen. It's just been viewpoints of the piece. But the one thing I will say that is really apparent to me is that you can say what you want about the culture of Rangers, the club, and the support. We've not been looking for excuses, and we have had the right to look for excuses. When you think of what we've had this year in terms of injuries and bad luck, you know, it would test the strongest organisation and people about, you know. I mean, even on Saturday, you think about it, Hellander would have been in that team if he was fit. Possibly Davis would have been in that team if he was fit. Lawrence would certainly have been in that team. Tillman would have probably played if he was fit. Morelos, if he was to have been, you know, the Morelos of going to, would have been in that team. And through the year, we've had that constantly, either all at once or in pockets, and at critical times in the Champions League. Hammerings were, you know, for me, Conor Goldson getting injured really killed your season, I've got to say. So there's been a bit of a, and this is healthy, by the way, there's been a bit of a honesty amongst Rangers and the Rangers support, and that we have not looked for outs, get outs. And that's to our credit, and it's probably helped get us to where we're at this point in time, which is wholesale change across the board, on and off the park, which I think you're right, Dave. In hindsight, I think I was wrong in terms of saying, look, let's stick with 5-year plans and keep Wilson in, because we need I think radical was required. The proof will be in the pudding, but I'm pretty convicted if it doesn't come next year, then I think in the longer term, I mean 2-3 years, it's going to be a dividend, because we were in a rut and there was a bit of a, this is how we do it, as you say. So that's my piece. I think, you know, we're lucky to be centres of influence on this podcast, and I look at my influence in terms of what I've been saying in the past, and something I've been right, and I would argue case. I still think, you know, transfers and stuff like that have come to fruition, and Suter as an example. But a lot of the time, I think I've been a wee bit too myopic.
I think the problem wasn't that they were doing a terrible job, right? We're not talking SPIV level. And I know that some fans will say, oh, David, this and that. But the place wasn't falling apart, right? And there's a line in the office that's great where he says, maybe here I've rolled a 3 and I could roll the dice again and get a 6, but I could also get a 1. And it was that sort of inertia from fear. And I think Rangers were in that state where, we could do things better, but we could do them a lot worse. And I just don't think that's Bennett, Bisgrove and Beale, to be honest. I think they were like, well, look, yeah, we could keep doing what we're doing, but what we're doing is second. And long term, we can't keep doing that. So you do need to go for it. Now, what you then need is a vision and a strategy to get that in place that that works. You know, you then have to do it. But I do think you have to try, because I think that we had, as you say, just a rut is the perfect word for it. I think that we'd become very inured to change and a wee bit maybe resistant to it. In Scottish football, that just ain't possible.
And it's a very suffocating environment, because at times I've looked at Rangers' support and I thought, you're not realistic. And then at the exact same moment, I've said to myself, aye, but that's what makes us Rangers. That's what got us back to where we were to where we are now. Last year, you know, Europa League, winning the league, stuff like that. And what you've just explained there is probably exactly what my condition was, which was fear of getting this far and then taking risk again. Maybe I was too risk averse, because what's going on at the club just now is ballsy. There's no question about it. And I think what we'll see in the summer in terms of spend and output financially will be ballsy as well. I always thought we'd loosen the purse strings this year just by virtue of timing of payables due and all this kind of stuff. And I just get a sense that we would have a wee bit more to play with this year. And it also would coincide with a rationalisation of the wage bill with players just naturally leaving, you know, Kent Morelis and so forth. So it's probably been born out of necessity as well, because Celtic have just been so dominant last two seasons and our treble's just, you know, it's just put us to sleep, really, and we've had to do something. Whereas if you'd seen us win a couple of win the two trophies outside the league, would we have kind of kept course and stayed where we were doing? Possibly, quite possibly. But it's kind of got to the point now where we've had to say, right, no, we need to think outside the box. I mean, even the appointment of Bisgrove is outside the box. He's an untried young CEO of a major European football club now. It's a brave thing to do, but measured, because he knows the system already, he knows the club, and he knows the environment. So I'm happy with the way things are going. Loads of risks, but loads of opportunities. And we're football fans, Davey. It's about excitement. It's about optimism. It's about believing in your team. And I hope the support I'm talking about here go from the kind of suffocating pressure that we create because of our standards and our demands to actually that bit where you come through the clouds and the blue sky opens up and you start to see what you've been wanting. That's what next season represents for us, hopefully.
Yeah, something to build on. And yep. I think in guys like Cantwell, Raskin, McCrory, you know, we're seeing that we have that. You know, we've got something in there where we go Goldson, Tav, etc. And you go, right, okay, there's something to begin with. We're not starting from scratch. We're starting with something, and then you add in, hopefully, the additional things that take us where we want to go. Because, you know, you saw on Saturday when the Rangers crowd are in full flow. It's a weapon. It's you know, magnificent place to play your football. And hopefully we'll see more of that moving forward. Right then, folks, that will do us for today on the Flagship Show. Cammy will be back later in the week with Heart and Hand Extra. Can I point you in a direction as well, if you're one of our free show listeners, to Dominant Martin's excellent series of 1986 to 1998, which drops every Wednesday. And of course, if you want more content, go along to Heart and Hand on Patreon, patreon.com/Heart and Hand. Andy, it's been a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on, Davey, and I hope you have to roll me out for many more pleasurable moments in next season.
Yes, absolutely.
Because you owe me so many.
I do. No, absolutely. See, when we go them at Parkhead, first game of next season, I will roll you out on a Monday, I promise. They're promise put in place. Right, folks, thank you for listening. I'll talk to you again soon. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Podcast Network.